This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
One lesson in the Delta Airlines mess: sometimes maybe be nicer to your competitor. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Delta Airlines could cancel nearly 250 flights today, the aftermath of yesterday's computer outage that stopped all Delta takeoffs around the world. It started with the power outage in Atlanta. Passengers were stranded, meetings ruined, vacations thwarted. Marketplace contributor Seth Kaplan is editor of Airline Weekly. He's author of the book this year, Glory Lost and Found: How Delta Climbed from Despair to Dominance in the Post-9/11 Era. He points out one swashbuckling corporate decision that may be making things worse yesterday and today. Good morning, Seth.
Good morning, David.
Part of the planning that goes into the potential for a mess like this is that I think what? Airlines have relationships with the competition to take their passengers if they have to cancel a lot of flights, right?
Yeah, most of the competition anyway. Delta overall runs an extraordinarily reliable airline. I mean, that's part of why what happened yesterday was rather surprising. And they're not shy about bragging about that fact. And actually, about a year ago, they canceled one of those relationships that you just mentioned. They're called interline agreements. And most of the big airlines have them with each other. I mean, even airlines that are fierce competitors have these agreements to sort of reaccommodate each other's passengers, transfer bags between them, those kinds of things. Well, they got rid of that deal with American Airlines, and they left no doubt about why they did it. They said, we're reaccommodating five times as many American passengers as American accommodating Delta passengers, just criticizing American's operation.
So in the teeth of this yesterday, the fact that Delta had canceled this relationship with American might have made it harder to book passengers onto American.
Yeah, it would have been, not only more expensive for Delta because they don't have that deal where they can just sort of put people on those flights, but harder as well. On a day like yesterday, you want as many of those deals in place as possible. And American, being a very important competitor, a lot of overlap with Delta, airports like LAX and JFK, the two fly to a lot of the same places, you would want to be able to very easily put your passengers on two American flights.
All right, so I'm hearing a lesson in humility here. I'm hearing a plea for cooperation, people, as we say in kindergarten. What about lessons of yesterday for passengers? I mean, normally you say check online to see your flight status. With the computers down at Delta, that would not have helped anybody.
It wouldn't. You know, one more manual thing that people can do is carry a printout of their itinerary. There were reports yesterday of some of the veteran airport agents actually handwriting boarding passes, you know, once they could verify that their passenger was indeed on a flight. So sometimes, this technology is great when it works, the apps and the mobile boarding passes and all of that. But sometimes good old-fashioned paper can help.
All right. Maybe scan the media, scan social media to see if it's one of those days on your airline. Seth Kaplan, editor of Airline Weekly, always good to talk to you.
Likewise, David. Take care.
There's news from the government this morning that productivity in America is down again, down at a 0.5% annual rate. The decline is a surprise, and it's the third consecutive quarter that it's taking more people to get the work done. Let's say good morning to economist Drew Mattis at UBS Securities.
Good morning.
So productivity, should we be concerned?
I don't think so. I think this is more of a matter of growth slowing. You know, what we are seeing is firms hiring a lot, and then the question becomes, can we really trust the output numbers? And that's something we've been struggling with, because not only do you have a lot of hiring going on, but pretty much no one's getting fired. And surveys of businesses are suggesting there's decent growth. So the only thing suggesting there's weak growth is the U.S. government GDP numbers, which feed into the productivity numbers.
So perhaps that will get revised. Perhaps the quarter that follows will be stronger. We'll keep watching that. But when productivity drops, it suggests that there's a little more hiring than there is the work getting done.
The good part, if you want to call it that, of the weak productivity numbers is the amount of hiring that has to take place. If you need to boost production and you're not getting a lot out of your current workers, you need to add even more workers. That usually will boost the hiring, and given the fact that hiring is something that people have been concerned about for a long time, I would say that's modestly good news.
Economist Drew Mattis at UBS, thank you for this.
Thank you.
As part of his economic plan announced yesterday, Donald Trump announced he would spend $500 billion on infrastructure. He argues double what Hillary Clinton wants to invest that way. Among the challenges, a lot of infrastructure investment is done by cities and states, not by the federal government. And despite ultra-low interest rates these days, many of those cities and states are not borrowing money to do the infrastructure. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more on this double paradox.
By some estimates, more than $1 trillion needs to go into things like clean water, roads, and the power grid. Much of that falls on states and cities. But they're not borrowing, that is, issuing bonds, the way they were pre-recession. It's down by a third to Standard & Poor's. S&P analyst Gabriel Pettick says many states are debt shy because their credit is dodgy, even with the economy okay.
This has been a different kind of economic recovery where there was typically a strong rebound. And in this case, it's been pretty sluggish throughout.
Many states are saddled with other costs, pension payments, Medicaid, so they're wary of borrowing and spending more. The thing is, there are willing lenders, says Harvard Business School's Rosabeth Moss Cantor.
Pension funds. There are some sovereign wealth funds in other countries that want to invest in the U.S. because we're seen as stable.
There is a cost of inaction. Traffic jams cost an estimated $100 billion a year. Power outages, $150 billion. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.